John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
Well, exciting times for the Seattle Dragons. They had the draft this week. 71 players drafted. They were able to get the allocation of the quarterback with Brandon Silvers. I know the schedule should be coming out here in the next few weeks. Tickets are on sale right now. February is when it's going to start, right after the Super Bowl. And so joining us in studio is Brandon Silvers, who actually is now used to spring football in the sense that he played in the AAF and now comes over as the allocated quarterback to the Dragons. And so, Brandon, welcome to Seattle. And how do you feel about this move to go to your second spring league?
I feel good about it. You know, definitely last year was, you know, tough how it ended things. But we're moving on, and I'm excited to be a Seattle Dragon.
Yeah, so, I mean, you had kind of the weirdest quarterback story of the AAF in the sense that, you know, here you go in, you got Christian Hackenberg, you have Zach Mettenberger, and then you actually have Johnny Manziel on the team, and you're sitting all behind them. And then as you finally got your chance, you did better than all three at the end of the season.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I just had an injury early in the year, so it pushed me back about a month. And then Zach Mettenberger got hurt out in Utah. I came in, did a pretty good job, and then the next week Johnny comes in, and then it was just me and him, one-two punch. So, you know, it was a crazy quarterback room, but it was also a great quarterback room, and I learned a lot from those guys.
What was it like with Johnny Manziel? Because he's been such a, you know, an interesting figure in the National Football League, and how it didn't work out in Cleveland, the problems that he had in the CFL, the fact that he was able to join the AAF. I mean, what was that? What kind of thing did you pick up from him?
Johnny was one of the best teammates I've ever had. Once he got there, he just wanted to learn the system. He didn't really, the outside voices weren't really there. So he was just focused on football, and, you know, me and him clicked right off the bat. And I'm very thankful for him coming in and being open-minded and trying to learn the system as quick as he did.
Describe what type of quarterback you are. Mobile quarterback, strong-arm quarterback. Kind of give a picture to everybody that's now getting to know you and get to know you when the Dragons hit the field.
Definitely a pocket passer. Very accurate. Pretty strong arm. And, you know, once the play breaks down, I can get out of the pocket and make some plays down the field and on the run.
Of course, I mean, you came from Troy. What got you down to Troy?
I really just love the coaching staff there. Coach Larry Blakeney, who's a Alabama Hall of Famer, and just going up there, learning from him. Then Coach Neil Brown came in, that's at West Virginia now, and really retooled everything that I, you know, was from there. And you know, I'm just grateful for the two head coaches I had at Troy, and you know, I wouldn't be here without them.
So now you get the invite to go to the New Orleans Saints in their rookie mini camp and all that stuff, and unfortunately they didn't sign you. What happened there?
I was going to the Saints, and I switched to go. I went to the Philadelphia Eagles for their rookie mini camp. So I think they already have four quarterbacks there. They signed a guy the week before there, so I just went up there, and I did a really good job. I just didn't get signed. Had to work out with the Browns last August, and then I just knew I was going to the Lions League after that.
Well, talk a little bit about the contact you first had with the XFL and how you get to be one of the eight allocated quarterbacks in Tier 1.
So I got done with the Jets. I got let go in May, and then I started talking to Coach Kevin Gilbride in New York about the XFL and how he wanted me up there. And then I just started talking to all these coaches and, you know, just trying to get allocated to a team that wanted me. You know, once you get let go a few times, you're just looking for a person or any coach to want you. And you know, Coach Jim Zorn wanted me the most, I guess, and they sent me up here. So I'm excited to be up here and get to learn from a Seattle legend like him.
Now I take it as an allocated quarterback, that means you're totally committed to go into the XFL, even if the NFL would call, right?
Yeah, I had a workout with the Browns about a month ago, but I already signed my deal, so I was not going to go up there. I was all into the XFL.
As one of the eight allocated quarterbacks, I mean, how did you get the feel, or did you get to know some of the guys that were in that group beforehand and keep contact with them? Because obviously, I mean, to be picked, you know, is pretty much a cherished thing, because that was one of the things that was one of the issues in the AAF was that, you know, it was kind of a little chaotic at the quarterback position, where now where you look at it, it's not chaotic, it's pretty well, you know, transcribed. It's like, okay, we're going to try to do things the right way with the quarterbacks.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a better, way to put things. It was kind of a crazy deal from the quarterback draft that we had in the Alliance League, and now it's strictly just allocated quarterbacks with this league. So, you know, I've been through it all just for a spring league, and so I'm just open-minded about everything, and I'm excited to get to work.
What was the biggest thing that you learned from the AAF? Because I know talking to Oliver Luck and talking to some of the people there, the big thing that they learned from the AAF, there's definite interest in football after the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think the TV ratings were up on every time we played. It really wasn't bad fan attendance wherever we went. There was always good, you know, good crowds going in there. It was always going into the road games. It was always loud. I think there's a itch for people to have a spring football league, and hopefully this one works out.
Well, that's the one thing I think that they probably underestimated, and this is no knock on Memphis or anything like that, is that they tended to go more regional. Like, for example, I mean, when you go in AAF, I mean, it was more of the regional players around there. It was going to be a bunch of schools that were going to feed Memphis and some of the other teams, where at least now there's a bigger picture because you've got bigger cities in the XFL. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have a former quarterback whose son, before he retired, was heading possibly to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And so now, I mean, there's a bigger picture with bigger cities and more of an emphasis on getting the right quarterbacks.
Yeah, it's definitely bigger cities, bigger media markets. Most of the teams are in the Southeast. I mean, we had Orlando, Atlanta, Birmingham, and Memphis in our conference. So it was all around the Southeast. I think it's better to go bigger markets and then strive big.
And, of course, I mean, that's the one thing. It's like you're not have to go through some of the crazy things that happen financially in the AAF. I mean, for example, one team that was training in Florida and they didn't have all the stuff there as far as insurance and all
that.
Yeah,
I think I think the Orlando team was training in Georgia for, I forgot what the reason was, but they were trained in Florida, Georgia for a few weeks before the season or after the season, really.
Yeah.
So they were playing really a road game because they would have to travel there every time they had a home game.
Yeah, because I guess what happened as far as, just any kind of an injury that would happen, I mean, there was no coverage for it, from the state or anything like that. And so they had to pull everything up in Georgia and that. How smooth was the operation in Memphis?
It was good. I feel like we didn't have a practice facility or practice field till like week six. So we had to practice in the stadium or we would have to go some random high school. So it was definitely different, and we would have to travel a lot. But, all the coaches there were awesome. They can't really deal with nothing with that. That was just like our practice facility wasn't ready. So, but the coaches and everything like that were awesome.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's the one thing. You probably were affected more than anybody else because here you were now starting to take over the starting quarterback job, and all of a sudden, boom, you get the word, hey, no more games.
Yeah, we had our regular Tuesday morning meetings. We were meeting for about 3.5 hours. We'd go to lunch, and I went and grabbed lunch real quick. And my roommate Christian Hackenberg, he calls me and say, "Hey, B, we're going. We're having a meeting back at the offices. So come back." And then Coach Singletary told us, "Hey, league's over with. Don't really know much right now. We'll call y'all later, but it's looking like it's over with." So that's how we found out. And I think the San Antonio team was actually on the practice field when they got called off. So, it's just a crazy deal.
It really was. All right, so talk about, 71 players are now joining you with this team. What can you say as far as when you study the roster of the 71 draft choices that you like?
I just like how Coach Jordan built the inside out. We got some big linemen coming in. I already got buddies, texting me pictures of how big the linemen are, so that's always good. We got the two running backs that played with the San Antonio team and Coach Riley last year that, they were 1-2 punch. And we got some tall and talented receivers, too. Haven't really looked at the defense yet, but I was looking at the offense the first day. So it's going to be pretty fun working with those guys.
Seemed to be a pretty good emphasis on tight ends. Is that something that will help you in the offense?
Yeah, definitely. I think we probably got 5-6 tight ends. Colin Jeter, that was going to play with the Memphis team. He went to LSU, so I know him. I think we're going to, like I said, he built the inside out, and we got some big guys up there up front and, a few athletic tight ends to throw the ball to.
Of course, on one thing, I think that two local guys that I think you'll appreciate, I don't know if you have a chance to meet him yet, is Keenan Reynolds, who was actually not from here, but he played, you know, he was pretty much on and off the roster for the Seahawks, and he's a really good slot receiver. And then Kaysom Williams, who's a, you know, really good go up and get him type of wide receiver. I think you're going to like these two guys.
Yeah, I met Kaysom Williams a few days ago, and then we had our meet and greet last night with him. So just getting to know him and getting to talk with him. So yeah, I'm excited. We got a few guys from Seattle, so hopefully they can show us around a little bit. They've been showing me around all week since I got here. So you know, I'm just great to be here, and I love the city of Seattle.
Okay, well, tickets, you can start to move on right now, and I know the schedule is going to be coming out here in a couple of weeks. And now you're the quarterback, you're the tier one quarterback, the allocated quarterback, Brandon Silvers. Thanks for joining us here in studio.
I appreciate you having me on.
Okay, and of course, coming up next, we're going to go ahead and get the grade book out, and with the report card, it's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the report card with the professor.
And of course, the report card we bring out every day. We look at the good, the bad, the ugly, the smart, the stupid, what people say, what people do. We take the pulse of what's going on. We take the stories. We take the anecdotes. We take voices. We take social media, all those different things. And we attach a grading. Help us out is Taylor Jacobs. And so, Taylor, I guess, you know, we're right now trying to figure out what's going on with the officiating in the National Football League. I mean, what kind of grade do you give it?
An F. I don't think you could give it anything else. I think it just feels like a total failure of the entire system. Missed calls, missed opportunities. It just feels broken. Like the whole thing is just broken.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, it's as bad as I've ever seen it, and it's sad because I don't blame the officials. I blame the league because I think they put them in such a tough position, and if they continue doing that, even though, again, they got a five-year agreement to have collective bargaining and all that stuff and have a new deal, but I think it's really affected negatively what's on the field. So we got to fix that up and figure a way and get rid of that pass interference call, which is just absolutely horrible. But, of course, not horrible right now is what we have on the report card, unless we put a bad grade on it. So, Kurt, what do we have?
Well, today, guys, we're going to start off with a retirement announcement yesterday that I think caught a lot of people off guard, mainly because people wondered, really, he's still playing football? Brock Osweiler, officially retiring from the NFL. Guess how much money he made in his playing career?
$41 million.
$41 million for Brock Osweiler, a career record of 15-15, but he did get a Super Bowl ring with the Denver Broncos. How are we grading his career in the NFL?
Give it a D, I think, you know, because I still remember because I covered about maybe four games down the stretch and saw the best football that he had, you know, working, you know, with the Denver Broncos while Peyton Manning was trying to recover from injury. And I still remember he was bitter and mad when they gave Peyton the job back. It's like, wait a second. You're mad that Peyton Manning, one of the greatest quarterbacks ever, even though, again, he was probably playing at like 75-80%, you know, got the job back. It's like, who are you? Who are you to do that? And it's like, because I remember he was not happy about it whatsoever. And I can understand. It's like you help get the team to the playoffs. I mean, you're there with Gary Kubiak. And I still remember a long pass that Kubiak really blew up on him on, you know, and, you know, he shouldn't have thrown the long pass and get it intercepted and all that stuff. But overall, I kind of give him a D.
Yeah, John, I would give him a C minus as far as his playing career. He was able to sort of keep the Broncos afloat during that time with Peyton Manning. And you're right, he didn't necessarily handle the situation well. But I'm going to give him an A for off the field, John, to make $41 million and be that type of quarterback. Take some sort of skill, some sort of trickery, some sort of Kaiser Soze type sneaking around to make $41 million and be that type of player. Whoa.
Mm-hmm. No, that's you got to give him credit for that. I mean, he certainly made his money. And of course, he made so much money that the Houston Texans had to trade a second round pick just to have the Cleveland Browns pick up his contract.
Insane.
My favorite Brock Osweiler memory is the fact that he has a misspelling on a tattoo on his arm.
Yes, he does.
He used the wrong form of it's in Live Life to Its Fullest.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an F for Brock Osweiler's tattoo.
Yeah.
A-plus for his money-making ability.
Oh, no
can't,
doubt.
Can't knock him for finessing NFL teams out of $41 million. Our next item on the report card comes to us from a member of NSYNC, J.C. Chazay, and the Seahawks wide receiver group. They caught the eye of the boy band from the 90s and 2000s. Here's Chazay's grading of the Seahawks tribute to the boy band.
Did you see the Seattle Seahawks game this weekend?
Yeah.
Okay, so they broke the internet because they did a touchdown celebration where they channeled bye, bye, bye. What was your reaction to that? thought it was fine. You thought it was fine?
Yeah.
How was their execution, though? What was their performance like?
I said I thought it was fun.
Oh, you thought it was fun. Okay. Do you think that they did a good job? Like, that they executed it well?
Yeah, it was great to see.
And any advice for them on how they do it next time?
That's up to them whether they want to do it next time.
What's the next song they should do, though?
He sounded like he couldn't be bothered by those questions.
Yeah. It's one of those things where it's like if you're driving in a car and you see him, I mean, you kind of like you did against Myles Garrett, you roll down the wind, let him roll down the wind and punch him in the face.
Whoa.
I mean, because again, it's like he's promoting your brand. It's like how many people even recognized it was your group and your song, Bye Bye Bye, that they put out there. It's like, you know, he's so uninterested. I mean, that's like that's worse than a Bill Belichick interview. I'm giving it an F.
Yeah, I'm going to give the interview an F. I do like J.C. Chazé, though, one of the more underrated members of NSYNC. But yeah, no, John, just sounded like he couldn't be bothered. This was a fun. If it is truly fun there, JC, look, have some fun with it. Talk about it in a fun way instead of just
being promotional.
Right, exactly. Have some fun with it because it truly was a great sort of callback, throwback, great execution. I did one of those in high school. I also danced to a Backstreet Boys song at an assembly. So speaking from experience, great execution, great hip movement from the Seahawks wide receivers. A on the dance, but an F to JC. Not you, JC. Oh, the other JC.
JC, we're Chazé. We're giving you an A. JC Chazé, member of NSYNC, strong F. And then finally today, Reggie Jackson, former Yankee great, he was on MLB Network Radio yesterday and was unaware that his mic was hot.
Giancarlo Stanton's calf quad is hurting him. He's not in the lineup. Your thoughts? He's been out all year. How the f*** did he be hurt? This isn't on air, is it? No, is it really? Honest to God.
Hey, it's on air, Reggie. What are we grading Reggie Jackson's
he lives true to how he's always been, where it's like, I mean, he can come off and do an easy interview and stuff like that. But, I mean, that's him. So, because, you know, cuss, swear, do all those things and, you know, be opinionated. If they don't like somebody, just say it, all that stuff. So I'm going to give him a B.
It is October. So, I mean, he is allowed to, it feels like this is his month. He's allowed to do whatever he wants. But this, just as a former producer, someone who's run a board before, this is the stuff of nightmares, John. Oh, yeah. This is the stuff that literally when we go to bed, we have nightmares about these types of situations. Mics left on air cursing, not being able to dump it in time, all of these things. So I'm going to give it an F just because it harkens bad things. It is October. It is a spooky month. But boy, oh boy, that's a scary one.
Yeah, Mr. October, you got to get an F on that one.
Yeah.
Different F than the ones that he was saying.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you give him an F, not an F bomb.
No, definitely not.
Okay. Hey, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Coming up next, it's our daily dose of the Gras. Oh, no, I'm sorry. We got text questions. That's coming up in two segments. But our text questions at 710-710, it's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Well, the best story of the day is Russell Okung tweeting out from the Chargers that looks like he may be coming back right now from his pulmonary embolism and all that stuff. Apparently, he must be off the blood clot medication. That's great news. Good guy, good player, and they definitely need him with the Chargers. But what we need is your text questions. So text us at 710-710. Curtis, what do we got?
Yeah, great news today from Russell Okung. Great to see him back in the NFL. From the, let's go with the 425, John, they want to know, how much longer will the Cowboys go with Jason Garrett as their head coach?
Through the whole season. I mean, they're not going to make a change. You know, he does like him, but remember, they didn't give him a contract extension. And so with that in mind, if he doesn't go to the playoffs, and right now it's in question, this is a big game for him going up against Philadelphia, then there could be a change after the season. But the What seems to be clear is now against the better teams, he and the play calling has become more conservative, and that's always been a criticism that they've had of him, particularly when he was the play caller. Now, Kellen Moore is the play caller, but right now it's not working out. They're only scoring in the last three losses, 18.3 points a game. That's not good enough, but he'll keep the job through the year, and depending on where he goes, we'll see if they give him a contract extension or let him go.
From the 206, they want to know who on the Seahawks stands to benefit the most from Will Dissly's absence.
Luke Wilson, and I mean, maybe more than anybody else, Ed Dixon, you know, because his poor Ed comes over, signs in free agency, had six games as a on the injury list on the PUP. Then he comes back and plays pretty well, but he really was more alternating as the starter than anything else with Nick Vannett. You know, Luke Wilson was a big benefactor because right now he's a starter. But in two more weeks when they get Dixon back, I mean, he was going to be a guy that was probably going to go off the roster to now a guy that can reemerge as the starter.
From the 425, they want to know, Professor, how many sacks do you see the Seahawks defensive line getting against Lamar Jackson?
I thought it was going to be three or so or four against against Baker Mayfield, and they got none and no pressures. But you'd have to think they've got to get maybe three. He's going to run into something and run into a few mistakes because he's running all the time. So you got to hope it starts to pick up because those numbers are not good when you talk 10 in six games.
John, who wins tonight, Chiefs or Broncos?
I'm going to give it to the Chiefs because, again, they're the better team. They have the better offense. I know their defense isn't that good, but can Joe Flacco take advantage of it? So I'm going to give it to the Chiefs.
From the, let's go with the 425 again. John, what is the most realistic destination for A.J. Green come the trade deadline?
Staying in Cincinnati. I don't think they're going to give up on him. And you know, I know that he's still going to be out a couple more weeks with that ankle injury. That's not good. But again, the Bengals aren't ones to want to, you know, give up on the season, even though the season they should give up on. And they're not in the position where they always like to, you know, get. But if they get the right value, I mean, anything can happen. I think we've seen that with Jalen Ramsey. You know, he ends up getting traded when they said they weren't going to trade him. I still think in the end, the Redskins will trade Trent Williams if they get the right offer. So I'd stay tuned to that.
From the 253, where will Kenyon Drake end up, the Miami running back?
Whatever team that gets an injury at running back in the next week or so, that's where I think. Because, I mean, what you're talking about is probably, what, a fifth or sixth round pick. It's not going to be expensive. It's not like he's great. It's not like you even know for sure that he's a starter. But I think, you know, I don't know what team it's going to go, but it's going to be a team that's going to pop up with an injury.
509 wants to know, if Dan Quinn gets fired in Atlanta, will he get a head coaching job next season or have to be a coordinator?
He'll have to be a coordinator. I mean, you know, what he would be nice for him if, you know, somebody who's a former Seahawk coach who worked with Pete Carroll goes to a team, gets a head coaching job. I mean, just like an example, and this probably won't happen, but let's say that they're so happy in Detroit with Daryl Bevel that Bevel all of a sudden gets a chance to be a head coach. I think the first guy he'd go after would be Dan Quinn.
From the 509, they point out Jadeveon Clowney is the most double-teamed edge rusher in the league, according to NFL Next Gen Statistics. How does this factor into the Seahawks' lack of pass rush?
I think it's going to change because I think what you've seen, because again, I think it's funny because I know the thought is he only has one sack and so he's not really done much, but he's, you know, he's seventh in the league right now with pressures and hits on the quarterback. I think he's grading out as the seventh best edge rusher in the league, and so he's really doing well. But you saw what it opened up. I mean, it opened up 18.5 pressures and hits and that for Quentin Jefferson. And now you throw in Jaron Reed in the mix, cause now that he's going to be back, I think what it's going to do is going to open things up for Ziggy Ansah.
Which of the three winless teams gets a win first, Cincinnati, Miami, or Washington?
Well, Washington's already won one. They beat Miami.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, so Cincinnati or Miami?
I'd say Cincinnati because I just think that you know, they have enough easy games and all that stuff. And you know, Miami's just terrible because they are tanking, even though the commissioner doesn't want to buy that. But I think they're tanking, so they're tanking. So I kind of give it. And, of course, they went to, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback, and that gives them a chance to maybe win one game. But when you put him in for another game or so, then things start to go down as far as his performance.
From the 206, they want to know, how do you see Phil, or from the 425, they see, how do you see Philip Lindsay matching up against Kansas City tonight?
Well, I mean, you'd like to see him match up more because, I mean, he's such an explosive, exciting player, and they have him sharing the position right now and not getting him on the field as much. He's sharing it with Royce Freeman. So I think right now they need more Lindsey than they need Freeman. So you would hope. I mean, he can match up because, again, they're terrible on defense. But, I think just give him the ball.
John from the 253, they asked the question, do you think Todd Gurley will be on the Rams next year?
No. I have to look and see if there's guarantees still in his contract. If there are, then he probably will be. But you can't pay $14.5 million for that kind of production. So I have to think that they've got to figure out a way to get rid of his contract.
John, where do you see the 49ers getting their first loss?
Probably it could be in week 8 or so. I mean, because I think they have a couple of winnable games coming up, and they've been very fortunate because they've had so many winnable games. But of course, the Ram win was huge. You know, they've taken on a lot of the teams that Seattle's played, and they've blown them out as opposed to having to close games. But it'll catch up to them because, again, you watch, it's the injuries that's going to be the problem.
I feel like it's going to be a tough. I don't know if they're going to lose this week because it's against Washington.
I know. They're not going to lose this week.
No, but they got Carolina, and if Kyle Allen is still...
That could be the loss right there.
Yeah, if Kyle Allen is still dealing it like he's been doing, that could be...
And their defense is a top-10 defense in Carolina.
That's true.
Although, surprisingly, I think that you look at the 49ers, and right now you can say they're a top-5 defense.
From the 509, they want to know, in honor of the Seahawks touchdown celebration paying homage to NSYNC, who has the best dance moves at ESPN?
At ESPN?
Or 710 ESPN. What?
I mean, I'm going to have to defer to you because I don't ever see anybody. They're not here at the house.
Best dance moves. Bob was a musician. Tom, a musician as well. Maybe they've got some rhythm to them. It's not me.
No, it wouldn't be me.
Maybe Jessamine, Maura, Ashley. Ashley does line dancing, I know that. She's
done
but
it's
that
country.
Before.
You can't count.
Yeah,
that.
That's true.
You can't listen to
it. I don't know if there's a top-notch person to say to that question.
What about Jim Moore? Probably not.
Sure, yeah, we'll go Jim Moore.
Yeah.
From the 425, they want to know, if Cam Newton gets cut or traded by Carolina, which team would be most looking for his services?
Well, he's not going to get cut this year. I mean, his contract's guaranteed now that he's been past week one, and so he's going nowhere this year, but I think they'll cut him next year. But now you have to sort it out because, I mean, if you're a team that's in the top of the draft, you've got a great draft to be able to get a quarterback there, and then, of course, you've got to compete against Marcus Mariota and Jameis Winston because I think they're both going to be available.
And then finally from the 425, they want to know, John, what do you make of the Darren Waller contract extension yesterday?
He's earned it. I mean, he's played really well for them at tight end. You know, everybody thought that they made a mistake by letting Jared Cook go, and Jared Cook is really good, having coming off a Pro Bowl year. But Waller's done well, and I think they got him at a pretty good price because, what was it, like $3 million a year?
Yeah, it was, I think, $9 million in total. He's been one of their best players from the jump this season.
Oh, no, That's a good signing for them and a good player acquisition. Of course, they've made a bunch of bad ones, but hey, what the heck?
Well, I mean, you got to hit on something. You throw enough spaghetti at the wall, something's going to stick.
Exactly. Well, coming up next, we got our daily dose of the Groz. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Time for our daily dose of the Groz. Dave Grosby joining us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. And fascinating interview at 11 o'clock. We talked to Tim Donahue, who is in the referee, has a movie coming out November 1st that's going to hit the big screen and all that stuff, talking about him being involved, giving information to bettors and all that stuff. And it's going to be great. Almost kind of compares this to some of the great mob movies that is there. And it's a fascinating interview. And, of course, I know you paid attention to that story back in 2007. In the NBA.
Sure, and the big surprise was how little impact it had on the NBA. You would think that the sanctity of the games would be sacrosanct, and once you couldn't trust the results that guys were throwing games, that it would have a big negative impact, and it never really did.
Of course, and that was the one thing. I mean, he did specify that he didn't do any changing of the calls. I mean, his calls were all this. There was information, you know, like he'd get on before a game and, you know, let somebody know who's not playing and how that's going to go. And so it was more the information that he gave up as opposed to, you know, changing his calls. But it was just fascinating, you know, talking about how he and two high school buddies kind of got involved in this. And then, of course, the stress and pressure that he put himself into by having the you know, everybody now investigating, and you know, you don't know for sure if the mob's going to come get you or anything else.
Yeah, and then, you know, you got to take his words with a grain of salt as well. I mean, you don't automatically assume that he's telling the truth, but I think it's a fascinating story, and I'm looking forward to seeing the movie for sure.
Yeah, I mean, November 1st is when it comes out, so that should be, I think, a really good one to be able to see and able to go. And, of course, I know yesterday, and, of course, it kind of times in with officiating and it times in with betting, and you were the one who educated me that, you know, things in Vegas are pretty much okay, which is why now those conference tournaments have had, you know, no problem right down there in college basketball. I mean, what do you think is turning as far as betting?
What do you mean?
Just as far as, I mean, you know, things, you know, because there was always that worry.
It's certainly more acceptable now, and that's not a surprise. And what I told you was that Vegas is the one that always has the most to lose. If there's anything that looks untoward, it looks bad. So most of the time when red flags go up, it's Vegas themselves who's identifying them, where, you know, the issues that you have with gambling, if they're going to be issues involving sports, are going to be of the illegal variety. But the legal stuff is well covered, and those guys have a vested interest in making sure that it's legit and it's above board, and so they usually do. So as long as that's the case, there are not going to be any issues. But we've seen kind of a slow movement towards legalized sports betting. Thought it might happen a little bit faster in some places. It's been wildly successful wherever it's gone in, but has not gone as fast as I would have thought it might have.
No, that's true. I mean, because that's always the worry. I know I think the NFL worried about it maybe more than any other league, is that, you know, there's going to be things that affect the officials, things that affect players and all that stuff. You never know, because any time it can happen. I still remember I was trying to do investigative stuff on that Boston College scandal back in the 70s.
Right. Well, there's been one basically every decade or every 20 years of stuff, as long as corrupt system that's in place in college sports that does not pay athletes for generating millions and millions of dollars is in place, there will always be temptation, and there will always be stories that will go that way. So it's not something that's necessarily going to go away, but like we said, really it's being policed fairly well, and it's very hard to get away with these days.
Mm-hmm. I know that one of the big topics was officiating and how bad it's been this year in the NFL, which is something I put on the league. But kind of the understory is what's going on in Los Angeles, because, you know, the stadium cost for the new stadium's gone up to $5 billion. You know, now, and again, this is not a bad request by the NFL, is that they want the players to contribute, you know, credit money for the stadium. And, of course, they've done that forever. I mean, you know, they did it until they ran out of money in the middle of this past deal, because, again, they appreciate the revenue, and they might jack up the you know, percentage that the players get from 47 to 49. But I mean, you look at LA, and there's no home field advantage for the Rams, even though they do get good crowds. Secondly, it's embarrassing what's going on with the Chargers, because, you know, 80 to 90% of the fans at least were Steeler fans in that game on Sunday. I mean, what's your thoughts?
Well,
on
at least half were 49er fans in the LA game, and it just goes to show that everyone who just assumed that the NFL would march back into LA and be super popular was wrong. The LA had gone 21 years without an NFL team. There are fans of other teams there. They had them come back in under their own terms for the most part. There's not going to be an automatic buy-in when fans have gotten used to going away from it, and it's very ominous for those who want to bring basketball back to Seattle, especially since you're going to have now a hockey team playing before that happens. The pie has been cut up with a very popular soccer team, which is something that no other market is dealing with. You know, the fact that you've got 35 to 40,000 people that are going to soccer every game, and you've got an NBA team that's been gone now for 10, 11 years. So there's no team coming on the horizon. It feels like another 5 to 10 years before anything is going to happen there. And to just assume that the fans will come back is wrong. And it was wrong in LA. The league was wrong to assume that. Now they're I think all they ultimately care about is butts and seats for the most part, and ratings aren't getting hurt, so it's not having any necessarily down impact. But to assume that LA would rally back to a league that disdained it and took two teams away from it and stayed away from 20 years and used it as a stalking horse, you know, boy, if you don't build us a new stadium, we're going to move to LA, was an incorrect assumption. And it may be for other sports to learn the same when you try and go back to cities that you've spurned and you've waited a long time to do it. So I think it may definitely relate to the Seattle NBA story.
Oh, no doubt. That's going to be kind of a fascinating kind of comparison. But I mean, I think, you know, one team in LA can work, but I mean, there's two teams. I mean, to two teams, the Chargers move should never have been allowed.
Obviously not, and I mean, you know, that was that weren't ready for it. It's in a minor league facility, basically, and as you pointed out, I mean, you know, even though they were close, it didn't make much of a difference. It didn't make much sense when it happened. The league allowed it to happen because, you know, they got greedy, I suppose. But you know, the LA market is the LA market. I don't think the ratings have gone up necessarily dramatically in LA. Not enough to make a big difference. And you know, it is embarrassing for those teams. It's not necessarily embarrassing for the league, but it's, I mean, you look at some of the video, it is astonishing because the 49ers have been, you know, a woebegone team until this year. And that game, there was amazing video cuts that you see on Twitter of, you know, all red. I mean, all red. I was watching Inside the NFL last night, and again, it kind of stood out that it was all red. It's the same thing when the Seahawks play down there. So there's not really a home field advantage, which is ironic, since the Rams were in the Super Bowl last year. There was really no leftover fallout from that in a positive way when you saw all those San Francisco fans at the game last week.
Yeah, I mean, that was just amazing. And to think about this, because I know talking to teams that now go down there, what happens is that you now know you've got fans, particularly even in the Coliseum. You definitely get them in the old StubHub, but you get them in the Coliseum, and now it's, you know, you play like you're playing in Hollywood. You're almost like you're playing like a movie actor, and so you play better games on the road when you go to L.A. because you know you can.
Well, it's like a bowl game. I mean, you know, you've got your fans. I mean, in terms of a home field crowd advantage, as important as you think that is or isn't, it obviously doesn't exist at all for the Chargers, and it's a borderline factor for the Rams. I mean, the only issue for teams to travel is, in fact, the travel, not the fans.
No, it's amazing. And so, and how do you think it's going to carry over into the new stadium?
I don't think the new stadium is going to make any difference. I don't think that's not the issue. The issue is not going to an old stadium. The issue is that fans got used to not going to not supporting a team specifically or finding other teams to support, and they're just not going to pay outrageous prices to support teams that they haven't been supporting. So it's going to take time. I mean, just I think that's probably the best way to put it, John. It's going to take 5 or 10 or 15 years to rebuild up the fan base to where it was when you had the Raiders and Rams there towards the end, and they were both doing fairly well, although the Rams were down in Anaheim, of course, at that point. You know, the Raiders had their success at the Coliseum. But, you know, you went away for 21 years, and the assumption that fans would snap back was in error in Los Angeles, and it will be in error in most places, I think.
Yeah, that's sad to see, but again, I guess, you know, that's what you have to do. And of course, they do get a nice new stadium. It'll be a state of the art and all those different things. And but again, you know, and of course, I don't know your reaction to what the Rams did in the trades.
You mean the trade for
yes.
The trade they did yesterday?
Yeah.
Look, they're desperately trying to save this season. I mean, that's, you know, what jumped to my mind. And it's interesting that the Ravens made that deal too, which is a little more state of mind for Seattle fans here, because they're coming up here with Marcus Peters, who's obviously played here already once this year. But you know, the Raiders, the Ravens, for that part, the Ravens I think are more seeing an opportunity with the Steelers being as down as they are, and the Bengals and the Browns not looking like much. There's a chance to lock up that division, and they're a very interesting team coming in here. But for the Rams, it's trying to save something. It's trying to save the season. It's being willing to, you know, to kind of mortgage the future with two number ones going on that Ramsey deal to get a guy who, when he's right, is an elite cornerback. But it's also a concession that they're going to have to win some games with defense. That offensively, they're not the same team that they were. And for the Ravens, the defense has been their problem. I mean, they're going to bring a really unique look into CenturyLink. I mean, I don't know how much people have seen of it, but, you know, they spent the entire offseason retooling that offense around Lamar Jackson's running abilities. And, you know, he takes some hits, so that's the one X factor in it. But But you know, their issues were on defense, and you know, they're looking to stop them up, and you know, that Marcus Peters is a good addition for them. So it's interesting to see the teams that made moves. The Ravens, because they sense an opportunity. The Rams, because they sense an opportunity slipping away.
Interesting stuff. And, of course, always interesting with our daily dose of the Groz. Thanks for joining us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline.
Yeah, I wrote a piece on how I think fans are going to react to Earl Thomas, by the way, on the webpage at MyNorthWest.com.
Well, you got to read that. So that's you think positive or negative? I'd say read it.
I think in the case of Earl Thomas, positive.
Yeah, it should be. And, of course, what's positive coming up is going to be the huddle that's going to be around the corner here. I'll be back tomorrow at 10. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.